Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. I wanted to dive into some quarterback situations here in terms of looking at some contracts that are up. And I think this is a good time to sort of nail down some of the uncertainties. I'm going to do this and then some of the backup stuff here as well over the next couple weeks, then start looking at some team stuff. So I just some stuff in the back of the mind. I think with the quarterback stuff, we kind of know these generally, there's the guys on the rookie deals, and then there's some of the guys that are a little bit more vets, but on maybe cuttable contracts and the like there. So we'll take a look here at them. So Kyler Murray, obviously, is the big one in terms of his contract. He is due for a – he believes he's due for a big deal. I don't know if Arizona thinks that. I think that they – are right to potentially hold out here. When you look, for example, I compared Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson's yards per attempt are actually better than Kyler Murray's. So Kyler Murray did take a big jump from 7.1 yards per attempt to 7.9 last year. From a fantasy perspective, he's pretty good. I think there's real reason to have concern about him with some of the stuff that we've discussed, which is he's uncertain about some of the preparation questions with him, I think, are real. And that's enough to sort of give us a little bit of pause there. And I think they are treating him with that in mind. So I think he's an interesting one. I think he probably ultimately gets paid, but I'm watching this because maybe it could go off the rail over the summer here. All right, Lamar Jackson's the next one up. He's got the vastly superior resume to Murray. He has an MVP, more yards per attempt in all but 2021. So if you look at all the years combined between those two guys, Lamar Jackson has all of his years are better or at or better than Kyler Murray's, with the exception of last year. So we use that test of how long has he been better than player X. Murray has really only been better than Lamar Jackson in 1 year. When you match up their projections. So again, one less year in the league, so you have to balance that a little bit. But I think it's interesting where Murray's at. He did take a big leap. We'll see though. There's I think concerns there, and you see a little bit more variance with Lamar Jackson's year to year number. I think Jackson. The thing that concerns me about Jackson, he hasn't played a full season as a starter. That's one thing, and the other thing with him is. I think there's only so many fits. And again, we can say we could put together a team that has really good fits for him. Or we could say, hey, we're going to build around him. For another team to do that and get it right is a totally different thing. I think about going back to when Jimmy Garoppolo was traded to San Francisco, for example. Belichick, like some of the thoughts out about Belichick at the time was he kind of sold short on that deal, but that he wanted to set Jimmy up in a situation to succeed. It's rare that we get franchise quarterbacks in their prime hitting the market. And one with Jackson having not necessarily being a standard drop back and pass player, I think it's a I think it would be an interesting experience in free agency, I guess would be the point. So I think he's the better player over Murray. I'd rather have him than Murray. I think that Jackson does present some risks in terms of if he's going to play year to year on franchise tags, kind of doing the Cousins angle. He hasn't played a full season yet. So that gives me a little bit of pause there with him. So that's really the concern there with him. Okay, now we look at guys that are sort of still on their rookie deal with a little bit more questions about them. So this is two guys here, really. I guess you could consider maybe a third one, but Jalen Hurts and Tua are the big ones here. Daniel Jones a little bit further down, I guess, and Baker and Darnold are in a whole separate tier of these guys. So Jalen Hurts, again, they're smart with what they're doing, which gives me pause. They're smart with what they're doing in, hey, we're going to use his contract savings to pay up for wide receiver, right? We could pay Goddard, we could pay AJ Brown because we're not paying Jalen Hurts. And as a result of that, you can definitely get more out of your team because of that savings at quarterback. That's a big deal. So that would be a huge benefit to this. The problem that I have with them is they realize the edge in this. And as a result of realizing the edge of this, they've actually added another first-round pick next year. And are they going to get to a point with Jalen Hurts where they're going to say, all right, well, we don't necessarily need to pay him because we can recreate this, or we can just draft somebody and we can get the cost control for another 5 years. And we have this really good team and we can just insert, average to above average quarterback on a rookie deal. And we see what happens with that, right? That's a little bit of my concern with them. He is in the range of outcomes of being quarterback one. I think he is in the range of outcomes of finishing as the NFL MVP this year. The flip side of that is he's in the range of outcomes of being replaced next year, right? So you can, and I'm open to the idea of taking him as an upside swing, but I think you have to really be focused on how you build around that. And if you do that, you have to build a certain specific set of guys around him to insulate him. Is that you take Jared Goff? Is that you take Matt Ryan? Do you pair? Does that put maybe a Derek Carr on your team in a way that you might not necessarily want to pair Derek Carr with Mahomes and Allen, right? If that's your Carr is your quarterback three, is a little bit redundant there. Yeah, so that would just sort of be some of the thoughts that I would have on Hurts. I'm fine taking him. He's in that early quarterback two range. I think that's an appropriate point, especially if you're going to go young. I'd rather go young there versus taking Fields, for example. I think at this point, I'm just a little concerned about Fields. I think, and I think you really can take Hurts plus. It's not even necessarily taking Fields, but you could trade down from a Fields where you would take Fields in that Fields range and get Hurts a little bit later on. I think that'd be something I'd be interested in exploring, but I have to know I want quarterback one lockdown, I want quarterback three lockdown, and I want to sort of build with that in mind and really use Hurts as a turbo booster to my team versus trying to play safe at a quarterback two spot, because you're trying to play safe around him and use him as a turbo booster. So two is the other one here. I don't think he has the same ceiling, so I think he should be further down. 6.6 yards per attempt in his career. That's a bad spot for a quarterback to be in. Listen, third different offensive coordinator, second head coach. And it's tough to succeed with that. It's really tough to succeed. They've tagged Gesicki. They brought in Tyreek Hill and Cedric Wilson, Chase Edmonds, Sony Michel, and Raheem Mostert. So lots of assets there to go around with him. It's put up or shut up time. They've got multiple picks next year as well, right? They've sort of done the, hey, we'll play this out, cost control, all that at the quarterback position, very similar to what Philly has done with Jalen Hurts, but trying to play it out and see what they have. Like, this is every opportunity to see if he's the guy, and then we'll go from there. Again, Mike McDaniel, the new head coach there for the Miami Dolphins, was the offensive coordinator with the 49ers. We saw what he did with Garoppolo, right? There was questions, concerns about Garoppolo's game. I think there still is, but ultimately you get to a situation where it was a floor-raising situation out of Garoppolo, right? They got much higher from him than maybe than some of his talents and they got enough out of him, right? And they actually got it to be like an 8 yards per attempt passer, right? despite the fact that some of his other ancillary metrics aren't particularly good. So you have some hope for a guy like Tua in that scheme. So I'd rather have Hurts than Tua, just because I think that the odds are better. But I think that the odds of making a big difference are better with a guy like Hurts. Darnold next up here. Listen, just failing his way up. He fails his way into a trade. They botch the trade by guaranteeing his fifth year option. And then he's 44th out of 49 quarterbacks in yards per passing attempt since he entered the league in 2018. And they traded up for Matt Corral, which is okay, but doesn't do a ton of damage to him. And lo and behold, like, he could still win the job. So I think he's an interesting one. Daniel Jones is an interesting one from that perspective as well. I think Darnold's best case, I don't know if it's necessarily his best case, but I think a reasonable case for success, like if you want a success arc for him, is put together something like a Trubisky type timeline where you play good enough that you're wanted on like a good team to be the backup quarterback next year. And you could sort of rehabilitate your image, rehabilitate your valuation, and you become this hot, basically aftermarket guy a couple years later. I think that would be potentially a good outcome. That would be a successful track for a guy like Darnold. So, I mean, you got to remember, guys like Blaine Gabbert and those guys have hung around for a while as backup quarterbacks despite failing as starters. So even if that maybe rehabilitation starting quarterback future like Trubisky was hoping for, if that's not necessarily in Darnold's range of outcomes, you're hoping more for a Blaine Gabbert type act. So we'll see. Darnold's still young and has time, but he's been officially bad through this part of his career. Daniel Jones is one that I think is particularly interesting for me because I think he has a ceiling. We've seen him with some of the vertical stuff. He's been successful. They haven't done that with enough regularity to really exploit what he has to offer. And as a result, I don't think his coaching staff has gotten the best out of him. And so I think that he still has some ceiling. I think he still has potential. And if you told me like next year, like he finishes his quarterback between like 10 and 15, something like that, I wouldn't be super surprising to me over the next couple of years. He has the rushing ability. I think some of the stuff in the passing game, like we have proof of concept that this offensive scheme works. And I think that would be an interesting one. So he's one that I'm optimistic about potentially resurrecting his career. The other one here, the young guy, that's Baker Mayfield. And we'll see if he gets a chance to start someplace else or if he gets a chance to start in Cleveland or sort of what all that happens if there's a Watson injury a Watson suspension or an injury, I guess. But really the suspension is the main thing that we're thinking about there with Watson. So then you look down at some of the vets here. Mariota signed a deal that's basically all this year. It's a two-year, basically $19 million deal. And all of it this year is guaranteed. Next year isn't, and it's cuttable. So that's really a one-year deal. So if you're looking at Ritter, something like that, that's really the deal. 2 years, $51 million left for Watson. That's very similar to where Stafford was. I think it's probably a play-it-out year, and we'll see what happens there. Goff has $10 million dead cap next year. He has $5 million the year after that. They could save like $30 million both years by cutting him. That's probably going to need to be a reworked contract, but I'll say one thing about Goff. They haven't shown any inclination to get rid of him. Like they didn't draft a quarterback at two. They didn't draft a quarterback in the third round. They didn't draft a quarterback in the second round or the third round. They've had multiple classes to go about addressing the position. They weren't in the trade market. And I think the idea that Stafford was the cost for Stafford was a first, and then they had Goff is basically they had to eat Goff's salary. I don't think that's how you view that trade. So I think Goff is a good, it's a really good situation. Playing indoors, some of the concerns that you have about him, he's going to play a bunch of his games indoors. He's going to play his own games indoors, playing in Minnesota, right? So, you'll have to go to Green Bay and Chicago, but you're getting a good chunk of his games that are indoors half the season, basically. And that's just in the division. I think that offense could be interesting. So again, is that a super high ceiling? Probably not, but you're probably more looking like he's more of like a proven version of Tua than he is necessarily like that high upside version of Hurts. Matt Ryan, they could potentially cut him next year. I don't think that's really going to happen contract wise. So, just for what that's worth, Cousins has a big cap hit next year, almost $50 million, and he has a no-trade clause. So we'll see how that unfolds. Jameis is really close to a two-year deal. $12.8 million base salary next year, with a cap hit of $15.6 million and a dead cap hit of $11.2 million. There's not guarantees in that, but they only save $4.4 million by cutting him. It's not a ton of incentive to go that route. Jimmy Garoppolo is at $24.4 million salary. It's almost a $27 million cap hit with $1.4 million in dead cap space. I think he's a potential trade guy that could happen, but we'll see here. There's a limited amount of guys that are actually being a limited amount of buyers here in the market at this point. Tom Brady, it's a one-year deal in Tampa, and I found particularly noteworthy in his contract stuff that he has a no tag clause for 2023. I thought that's really interesting in terms of when you look at his profile and you look at some of the stuff that has happened over the offseason about him retiring and then unretiring and then all the Miami links and everything like that. That really opens up a situation for him, almost like with the Patriots, where, hey, we're playing this out. This is the final year, and then we'll see what happens after that. It wouldn't be super shocking to see him play next year. And again, if you were just going to come back for 1 year, what are you worried about a tag for? So just for what that's worth, I do think there's some ceiling there on maybe a two-year window for him. Last but not least, I did want to talk about Ryan Tannehill, $27 million next year. It's a $36.6 million cap hit, $18.8 million dead, basically $17.8 million in cap savings, no guarantees. Again, before you cut someone and move on, you have to figure out how to replace them. That's part of the problem. And again, if you average to above average, if you're going to pay a top 10 salary for that, it's tough to win that way. But it's really tough to win that way if you're in total purgatory at the position, which I think they'd put themselves in by cutting Tannehill. So that'll be one that I'll be really interested to see how it plays out. But I think, you know, when you compare a guy like Goff to Tannehill, I think Goff actually might have a higher range of outcomes than a guy like Tannehill. Again, Tannehill can run a bit more and maybe score some stuff on the ground and get some of that, but there's a lot of ways to think that this Tennessee offense gets bogged down. There's a lot of ways to see that this Detroit offense can really take off. So there's some stuff there, and I hope that helps in terms of getting some of the contract stuff under our belt here for the offseason and get a grasp on some of these things that might be changing landscapes here and landing spots here over the next year or so at the quarterback position. That'll do it for this edition, and until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.